Trying to get coaching cycles started and feeling like you just can't make it work? I've got the email course for you. Realistic Coaching Cycles is a mini course sent right to your inbox. It's 5 days of short videos that will teach you exactly what you need to do to start coaching cycles, document your work with a teacher, and help them implement the learning you've done together. Get it for free at buzzingwithmissb.com/cycles and start your coaching cycles today. Hey coach, if you've been waiting for the Confident Literacy Coach course to open up, your wait is almost over. The course is opening soon and I want you to be the first to know. Make sure you've signed up at confidentliteracycoach.com to be included on the wait list. You'll be notified as soon as it opens for enrollment. This year is going to be even better than before. I've updated the reading and writing modules to provide you with the knowledge you need to support your school in implementing practices that are proven to build skilled readers and writers. Get the PD you need to provide the PD and learning they need. Join the waitlist so you can join the course. Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Hey, Coach, and welcome to episode 185, The New Classroom Instruction That Works with Brian Goodwin. You are listening to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, and today we are working through our series on better instruction. I am so excited to bring this series to you because this has some really great stuff, really good strategies and ideas and things that you're going to want to really look at your school with a critical eye and say, are we moving in the right direction? Just to remind you, my course, The Confident Literacy Coach, I have a module all about how to support teachers in instruction, specifically in reading and writing. And you can grab that at confidentliteracycoach.com. You can join the wait list and get a coupon code for 15% off to use starting in May. So that's pretty exciting. You're going to have that code for 15% off. And that's going to save a nice little piece of change for you. You can use that towards something else that's really fun for you, like maybe Brian Goodwin's new book. I don't know. So you can also grab a free course at buzzingwithmissb.com/shift, where I teach you how to help teachers embrace new practices. So if you're trying to get some change to happen at your school, this is a great way to do it. If you're supporting teachers in SOR or any of the other practices that we're going to chat about today, it'll give you the methods that you need to make change happen. We are going to welcome Brian to the podcast and get this show started. So let's welcome Brian to the podcast. Welcome, Brian.
It's great to be here, Chrissy. Great to meet you. And I'm excited to chat about instruction.
I am too. Before we get to the nitty gritty of instruction, I would love to hear you introduce yourself. And I'd like to know just a few things to get started. Who do you help and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, as a president and CEO of a nonprofit, my job is really to help our staff and to support them and to be a servant leader. And I've got a great team, which makes it really easy and fun. I sometimes feel like it was the Verizon commercial where you had the guy had all the people in the background. That's what I feel like, right? My job is sometimes to get out of the way. But I think a lot of what I do is, connect with educators and then connect our staff with them, to kind of develop the ideas that drive the organization. That's how I spend a lot of my time doing this, doing podcasts, webinars, speaking engagements, but then also working with our team to develop our programs and our solutions for helping educators everywhere.
I love that. So then do you have a favorite podcast? Because I know you're a guest on lots of podcasts, but what do you like to listen to?
I'm kind of a news junkie. So I tend to listen to a lot in the morning while I'm walking my dog. So, this may be interesting. I have a blend of podcasts. I listen to the New York Times. I listen to that one, the Daily. I listen to the Wall Street Journal as well. And there's one that I really love. It's called Left, Right, and Center. So I love hearing it's a civil conversation about the issues that seem to divide us. And I love that kind of thing too, where people can be grownups and talk about issues that get contentious, but then, maybe you get to something deeper when you listen more carefully to other people too. So.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. My husband is a big news media guy as well. And he listens to his fair share amount of podcasts. And after a while it can kind of stress you out. even when the conversation is civil, it can be stressful. So I think that's admirable. You got to stay informed. So your book is titled The New Classroom Instruction That Works, right? Okay. So can you tell us why we need some new thoughts on classroom instruction?
Yeah, I mean, some of it, honestly, when you look at some of the strategies, they might not seem so new. But some of what has happened, though, in the last, like, really generation, last 20, 25 years, education research has really improved. It's gotten a lot more sophisticated. What we're now seeing in education research is what we were seeing, like, in medical research, decades ago, where now we're looking at true scientific studies where we have a treatment group, a control group. And because of that, we can start to draw some causal claims, which is important too. So I feel like we've gotten a lot more precise about what works in the classroom. The other thing we've been doing is we've actually had decades of brain science, cognitive science, if you will, that really tells us how kids learn. And so we were trying to marry those two things together. So I think what's newest about the new classroom instruction that works is this twofold thing of looking at scientific studies in classrooms with diverse learners. That's also really important. Mm-hmm. Plus then saying, can we overlay that on top of what we know about the process of learning, how kids learn? Because if you do that right, if we can create learning experiences that better reflect how our kids' brains work, it's easier for them, it's more joyful. And that's, mm-hmm. I think that's the other, if I could put a subtitle on all of this, it's joyful learning, right? That's what we're really trying to get to.
Yeah, that's fantastic. When you have people who are excited and joyful in their work, they are more likely to want to follow you wherever you go. I mean, you're going
right. Yeah.
Wherever you're taking that lesson. And I think, you know, that's so much of that joy does come from the teacher. And, you know, it can be hard to be joyful and be a teacher right now. So,
yeah. And that's hopefully what some of this can do is by, I think for some teachers, it might remind them of, oh, that is what I do. Mm-hmm. Now maybe I have a better sense of why I would do something like asking high level questions. Oh, I get what it's actually doing for my kids' brains. And why it makes learning more joyful and engaging for them too, the better we do that.
So. Yeah, I like that. So then I would love for you mentioned one strategy actually now. I'd love for you to dig in and share a few of your favorite strategies with us. So if you had to pick like three or four that you would say are absolutely essential, regardless of content area, maybe something that would span across grade levels, what would you really, you know, think that teachers need to be embedding in their teaching?
Yeah. I think what we're hearing that maybe is a good reminder for folks, mm-hmm. almost bookending a little bit how we think about lesson and unit design. The first thing, you know, we talk about cognitive interest cues, and we had in previous editions of the book, we talk about advanced organizers. Those things are still important. But what we're getting at is like that advanced organizer needs to hook kids' interest and hopefully their intellectual interest, right? It's easy to have like a fun TikTok video that gets their attention, but if it doesn't lead them into the learning, it's not as effective. So this idea of cognitive interest cues, tapping into student curiosity can be really powerful. I think we hear a lot of teachers saying, maybe since the pandemic, but honestly, I think it predates that, but kids are back in the classroom physically, but not so much psychologically or you know, emotionally, like how do I get my kids engaged, excited to come into my classroom? So I think that's one of the big things we're finding a lot of teachers are resonating with. Mm-hmm. The other one kind of goes along with that a little bit, Chrissy, where we're talking about student goal setting. And the second phase of learning is getting kids to commit to learning. And what we mean by student goal setting is actually maybe the shift here a little bit is we've all learned about the importance of learning objectives. I need to have those clear. My kids need to know where I'm going, where the lesson's going. But student goal setting is kind of flipping it a little bit on to the student side of saying, have I committed to learning? Do I have a goal that's meaningful to me? Do I understand why this lesson is meaningful? So, and then there's a third set of strategies, but I might just kind of lump them all together, mm-hmm. Underextend and apply. So that's the sixth chapter of the book, but we think about things like structured problem solving, cognitive writing, guided investigations can almost be rolled into one big strategy about how do I get kids to extend and apply their learning? So they have their own voice. They have maybe a little bit of choice of what they learn, and they're doing some inquiry. They're doing some discovery. I think we also have found that, and teachers will say that, you know, I know that's important, but somehow in the midst of like pacing guides and trying to get through, you know, so much stuff in 180 days, mm-hmm. that goes missing sometimes. And we're trying to let people know that's the most important thing you can be doing is getting kids in those deep learning experiences. So I think those are like, I cheated a bit. That was actually five strategies, but maybe the idea of like, really it's about student engagement, getting kids to own their own learning. I think we have seen that now in classroom studies as being really powerful for all kinds of students, right? Which is a good reminder too.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, because you're talking about cognitive engagement, you know, the actual engagement of kids thinking deeply about the content, reflecting on it, connecting it to their own lives and to their own interests. And you know, like the idea of student goal setting and monitoring, you know, we're wanting kids to be reflective about their learning process, right? As they're going through this content. Because like I've actually seen, you mentioned scope and sequence, and you know, they can be helpful and they can be the bane of your existence as a teacher, right? So I have actually seen social studies curriculum. It's so packed in. It's like so much information is smashed into people probably, I mean, in elementary, I see if people spend 30 minutes on social studies a day, that's a lot, unfortunately. And so then I have literally seen teachers out of desperation, right? Because they're held accountable for assessments, they're held accountable for curriculum. They're just writing bullet points on a chart tablet and putting it in front of students. And then that's the learning. That's it, you know?
I like to quote Daniel Willingham. He's a cognitive scientist at University of Virginia. He makes the point that kids only remember what they think about. So we need to give kids time to think about what they're learning. And I think that is partly going slower to go faster, or maybe to go deeper. And I think you're right. I think it's what happens is social studies and science are given short shrift because we feel like we've got to focus so much on reading and math. But I've seen examples of grade schools that are saying, we're going to build those reading and math foundations. Maybe in the morning we'll have our usual reading and math block, but afternoons are going to be these guided investigations that will be kind of an integration of social studies, of science, but also pulling in reading and math skills to really kind of make it come to life. And if you do that well, and I've been at schools that do this really well, it's the afternoon is where the learning begins, and you watch kids come in from the noon, recess. They're excited, like, okay, now I get to do something that's really meaningful to me.
Yeah, I think that we've moved away, a lot of schools over time moved away from like interdisciplinary units because I mean maybe the way they were done wasn't always more like, oh, we're gonna learn about apples and then that's, you know, so we're gonna color an apple picture or whatever. So it's not that they were always done in like this amazing way, but so many please people have moved away from that and everything is very siloed, I feel like, you know. And instead of saying, well, we're gonna practice, we're gonna learn some things in reading. We know that kids have to have background knowledge to be strong readers, right? So why don't we read about what we're learning in science? And then they echo it across their day, you know, and then use some of the strategies during the different content areas and in reading and writing that you have listed in your book. You have just so many great ideas that people can embed in that those lessons.
You know, and that's actually our hope, Chrissy, is that by helping teachers have a shared vocabulary of what we mean by good instruction, now we can work together. If I know what you mean by cognitive interest cue, like, oh, okay, now we're working on the same page here. And so, and that is also, I think, our other big hope for this book is that it elevates the profession. I believe teaching is a profession, no question about it. We asked the question in the beginning of the book, like, is it a profession? It's a rhetorical question. Of course it is, right? But the point is, like, we want educators to understand that there's a lot of sophistication to what we're doing here, and they should be proud to be in this profession. They should understand that it's on the same par as like engineering or medicine. Like, we have learned a heck of a lot about how the brain works. In fact, we've known more about how the brain works than at any point in human history. And so that's also a reason to be excited about being in this profession, that we can do some really great things for kids by having a shared vocabulary, by having a shared professional knowledge of how learning happens and the strategies that we can use to help kids get there.
Could you give us, you've mentioned cognitive interest cues a couple of times, so I think that might be one of your favorites. So can you could you share a little bit about what that can look like and how a teacher can go about choosing or a coach can go about supporting a teacher in choosing something that actually does the job of this strategy that you're really trying to get to?
Yeah, no, obviously it's one that's important. And what you'll find is that if you do this well, it weaves throughout an entire unit, right? So, but an idea might be to say, first of all, step back and look at your unit and say, what are the big ideas that I want kids to know here? What are those enduring understandings? What am I teaching kids when they're 8 or 18? I want them to remember when they're 80, right? And so then you would say, okay, if I know the big idea, maybe it's like we're trying to teach, I understand the concept here is really the water cycle, for example, right? Now you can think about how would I draw kids into that lesson? Is there a way to use like mystery here? Like, what, how does water go in the sky and then come down? Like, help kids frame this as a mystery. Or we talk about things that are like cognitive conflict or basically just incongruity. So something that seems the opposite of what we would think. You know, I always like to point out, I live here in Denver, Colorado. So today's actually a good example where when the wind is blowing out of the mountains, it's actually pretty warm here. It's like we're going to be in the 50s today because the wind's coming out of the mountains. Like, wait, that seems backwards from what I would think. That's an incongruity. Another one would just be like any kind of suspense, right? Language arts is full of that. What's going to happen in the next chapter? Mm-hmm. We also talk about like riddles or things that incomplete sequences. Mathematics is full of all of that. The other one is like, it's controversy, academic controversy, kind of safely ways like, well, there's two different ways to solve this math problem. Which way would you do it? Right. Mm-hmm. Or even like debates on that are, I know teachers like, I don't want to introduce any kind of conflict in my classroom or controversy, but there are safe things like, you know, what should we do about endangered species like the wolf or introduced species? You know, do we need to eradicate them and so forth? So anyway, those are like four kind of ways that we can think about, you know, using something that draws kids into the lesson that really becomes, you know, something they want to explore or inquire about or come to their own answers on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I think I've seen people use that whenever they focus their work on a model of like inquiry, right? Yeah. And so then they post something up and then they engage kids with questioning, like, what are you thinking? What are you wondering here? And then they can use that as a driver throughout their unit.
Yeah. And actually what you just said is really important too. I mean, let kids come up with the questions, right? Mm-hmm. Show them something and say, well, why do you think this happens? Like, why would this thing float where this other thing doesn't? Mm-hmm. What's really going on here? And so obviously science is easy to do that with, but we have lots of examples in the books about different, in every subject area, you can frame something to get kids drawn in and interested. And if you do that, you know, like that's not the end of the, you know, but like at least starting there, because if you don't do it, you know, you can keep on teaching, but the kids aren't really following you. They're not really learning.
Right. You got to get them in there hooked right at the beginning so that they are invested.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it takes some time and thinking up front, but it's well worth the effort. The other point you make is like, you don't have to go it alone. Why not do some team teaching? And, you know, every third grade teacher says, what would be a great way to introduce this lesson that keeps kids engaged? And, you know, it doesn't have to be every lesson you're using a cognitive interest cue, but maybe it's the unit has a big overarching kind of mystery that we keep drawing kids back to. Like, are we getting closer to solving our mystery? How, you know, where are we right now in our learning?
Yeah, I love that. And I think you're right. Whenever we can work together with our teams of teachers, we can do great things because people are sharing that burden. It's a lot to plan an incredible unit all yourself all the time, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But we have partnerships.
Yeah. We talk about having a what's in it for me. That's an advertising thing, right? What's in it for me. But that's where like sometimes teachers can come together, you know, sometimes you forget, why am I teaching this? What's in it for the kids, for them to learn this? So coming together in grade level teams or cross curricular teams and saying, why is this in the standards for starters? And how do we make kids understand what's in it for them if they learn this, how they'll benefit, how they can use this knowledge to benefit themselves or others, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. You're getting into something that that we're very curious about here because my audience is instructional coaches, right? Yeah. So we're talking about how we can support schools in moving towards embracing new strategies and things across the school. So do you have any thoughts about how we can structure our school-wide support as we guide teachers to embracing these practices?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things that's throughout the book is the idea of making sure teachers are intentional. Helping them become intentional. We see that as a breakthrough moment. I'm sure you have too, Chrissy, when teachers all of a sudden understand why they're doing what they're doing. And so I think as instructional coaches, it could be just some simple, you know, or, you know, softer feedback around, I see you doing this. Tell me more. Why did you choose that strategy? Mm-hmm. What were you hoping to have, the kids do? What were you hoping to have happening in their brains, their minds as they were learning? And so that's where I think a lot of the book, you'll see it's all front loaded. What do we know from cognitive science about why this strategy is important? And then what is the strategy? And sometimes it could be something as simple as like, I'm just going to ask a higher level question here and use wait time. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole bunch of cognitive science behind why that works. But that's also where, as a coach, I think it's helping teachers become reflective in their practice and say, well, why did I choose that strategy? And in some cases, I know I was guilty. This is the teacher. I didn't know why I did something. It was like, oh, it's Wednesday, I guess. I don't know. So helping teachers think about what are you hoping to see happen for your kids as you do this strategy is really powerful too. So that's, I think that would be my guidance, is like the reflective questions are really powerful.
Yeah. I love the focus on intentionality because we do see people kind of going through the motions, you know, well, I did it because it was the next page in the workbook. I did it because, you know, because you told me that anchor charts are good. I did it, you know, to check them
off. I'm supposed to do cooperative learning, right? So I did. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Isn't that what you want us to? I know you guys like to see this, so I did it, you know. But then whenever we're planning together or we are talking about how something went, we have those opportunities to say, okay, well, what was the impact on kids? And is that the impact you wanted? You know, could we adjust to change and get to the impact that you wanted?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the structure of your book, can you tell me about that once more? Because I think that could be a really helpful way for coaches to work with teachers and say, okay, we have this collection of strategies here we can pull from, you know, so how is your book organized so that they could use it to their benefit?
Yeah, exactly. So really, we go through a six phase model of learning. And one other thing that's in the book too, I might point out, Chrissy, is that when you look at the model of learning, it's about what's happening for kids. So you see a lot of models instruction, you know, there's going back to Madeline Hunter, all of that. And that's good stuff. We try to flip it a little bit on its ear by saying it's what's happening for kids, right? So here's the six phase model of learning. I don't think it's going to surprise anybody, but basically to learn something, you have to do six things. And the first thing is you have to become interested in it, right? If I really want to learn something, I have to become interested in it, hopefully because I'm intrinsically motivated. I don't just have to be cajoled into learning something. That's the first phase. Second phase is commit to learning. And that's because we know that learning is mental effort, right? You have to apply your brain, and our brains always want to switch off or switch down to kind of a lower effort mode. So committing to learning is about setting goals and knowing why I'm going where I'm going. Okay, that's sort of like the setting the table. Mm-hmm. But then we talk about focusing on new knowledge. And there's a lot of learning, a lot of cognitive science around how we focus on new knowledge, how if we can make learning visual, it's much more powerful for kids, giving them models, examples to follow. There's sort of like a direct phase of learning as well too. And so direct instruction is not bad. It's just, if it's the only thing you're doing, that's where it's bad, right? So focus on new knowledge is the third phase. The fourth phase really gets at another mental, science principle of consolidation. If we're going to learn something, we have to start to connect dots. Mm-hmm. Categorize, cluster it, connect new learning to prior knowledge. That's the key mm-hmm. to every learning. Our brains are big neural networks. So we talk about make sense of learning is the fourth phase. And that is where things like cooperative learning can come into play. But we switched the terminology a bit. We call it peer assisted consolidation of learning because that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Or high level questions that make me have to think about what I've learned, connect dots, connected to my prior experience, all of that. So that's the fourth phase of learning. The fifth phase is practice and reflect, because ultimately, if I'm going to learn something, I have to come back to that new knowledge multiple times. We know that from cognitive science, there's a process called myelination. The more I repeat a memory, the more I wrap myelin around that neural connection, the stronger that connection becomes. So practicing reflecting, but that's not just rote learning. It's the reflection piece. Like, what don't I get yet? What else can I do here? So there's strategies that we've associated with that practice and reflect phase. And then the sixth phase is extend and apply. And so that's what I mentioned earlier, where if I'm going to learn something deeply, I have to go back to that new knowledge, not just multiple times, but multiple ways. And so if I'm now having to think about a period of history and, you know, develop my own argument about what really happened here, I'm learning that much more deeply. And I will retain that knowledge if I've done that. So that's the six phases. And so really, you know, for as far as like, you know, helping teachers through that, the other point we make is don't run out and do all 14 strategies at once. Mm-hmm. Maybe focus on, if I think about that, those six phases of learning, where's maybe my biggest opportunity to improve the process of learning, and then maybe drill down on that. And is there a strategy or two that might be really powerful, because maybe there are either I can build on something I'm already doing, or it's something that maybe we haven't been doing as intentionally as we could have been. Mm-hmm. And then we can develop that. So I think we actually can almost use those six phases as a diagnostic tool to say, well, where do we think if the process of learning is breaking down, where might it be breaking down along those six phases?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that could be used kind of to evaluate your own unit planning and making sure you have kids have opportunities to do all of these different things throughout your unit or your week. Yeah, I really like that. Yeah. All right. Well, how can people keep learning from you if they want to learn more about your strategies, your method, all of this stuff?
Yeah, there's lots of stuff on our website. We're a nonprofit. So while we have products that are sold through ASCD elsewhere, we try to put a lot of stuff out there as well on the website, mcrell.org. Mm-hmm. So you'll see a lot of it. There's a white paper on this whole process of the six phase model of learning called Student Learning That Works. We have other things we put out there on best first instruction, which is really what this is, right? This is, and we believe that the better we can do with that, the fewer kids are going to need to be in tier 2 and tier 3. We actually do have a strategy that kind of addresses tier 2, but you'll find lots of good stuff, blogs, all kinds of examples about how to do this stuff on the website. And then if you want to dive even deeper, obviously you can contact us. We do a lot of work with instructional coaches, helping them, you know, deliver better instruction for their teachers and really develop a strong kind of coaching apparatus in schools too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Brian.
It's been great to be here. Thank you, Chrissy. I enjoyed the conversation.
Woo! Did you get a lot of stuff from that? Brian is one of those people that has information coming out every time he opens his mouth, right? He has so many great ideas, and I hope that you managed to grab a few. But I also want you to check out his book, New Classroom Instruction That Works, because it is a good one. It has some really great strategies, and I do firmly believe that this is what's missing in a lot of our classrooms. We have teachers delivering information and kids not really working with information, right? So if you are looking for ways that you can get teachers to embrace new ways of doing things, whether that's SOR or any other new practice you're asking teachers to try out, you can head to buzzingwithmissb.com/shift and grab the Making the Shift webinar. It'll give you the tools that you need. And next week, I'm excited, I'm going to have a really special guest. Zaretta Hammond is going to be here to talk about culturally responsive teaching. And I cannot wait to talk with her, because I have been wanting to talk with her for a long time, and I know that you have been wanting to hear from her. So until then, happy coaching. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching.